the Station of the Stars. RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls, on a glorious sunny day here in Poprad, which is on the east side of Slovakia, just at the base of the glorious Tatry Mountains. My name's Eric Wiltshire, and we are a truly international show as we go across to not the zit of the nose of Europe, but we go to the place where Tandoori was created, namely India and Lee Banks.
The deli of the belly of the universe. Honestly, what a place to be. I love it.
Oh, well, so I thought you were going to say something horrible, because I was going to say you're going to have the Indian tourist board round you like a ton of bricks. Also, joining us is the co-founder of the Consumer Action Group, Mark Gander.
Yeah, hello there from very, very sunny Paris, actually.
It is.
Very nice weather. As long as you don't go out into Paris, it's not bad.
Anyway, let's get started. Say hello to the guys at Talk Radio, X Replay Radio, you lovely people on Audio Boot, and of course, the wonderful folks on RTI. A little bit of housekeeping before we start, boys and girls. Just to let you know that Mark has caught up with the, which century would it be? I'm not sure yet. But anyway, Mark set up a Consumer Action Group page on Facebook, a proper one.
Oh, ooh.
A really, really, really one. And there are a couple on there which are not official pages. So, as so many of you, or thousands of you, go to the radio page, which is RTI, you will find an official link directly from that page onto the Consumer Action Group. You'll be able to see what books and advice is available, some videos of Mark. Yes. Maybe that's not such a good thing. Well, I would say he's photogenic, but he's got a great face for radio. And lots of other good stuff. You can also get involved with their Twitter feed as well, and get a whole, well, a raft of good information from the Consumer Action Group. So go across to the page, and we'll also put it on the programme notes this week as well. But before I forget, you've got an upcoming programme you've been involved with on ITV, haven't you, Lee? Mark, sorry.
yes, Mark. Yes, we have. We've been involved in a very, very exciting project. I mean, people hopefully know by now that we're the Consumer Action Group, and we get involved in all sorts of consumer problems and help them sort them out. And we often approach by the media for help in the preparation of documentaries and programs. And a few months ago, we started cooperating in a documentary about bailiffs. There's been some covert filming. There have been some shocking scenes which have been captured, and it's going to be screened on ITV1 in United Kingdom. I think it's on the 31st of October, 10:35 at the evening, a bit late, I think, on a series called Exposure. Exposure series.
So do they actually take people I don't want you to actually share the program, but it's not one of these programs where it's just full of problems and no solutions, is it?
No, it's really it's sort of fly on the wall documentary, I suppose. There are some journalists who managed to get jobs with various firms of bailiffs, and then were taken out on their training programs, and even though they were meant to be shown the ropes, they found in fact that what they were being shown was pretty nasty way of treating people. And of course there are interviews with people who've sort of suffered problems and so forth, and it's really examining the whole idea of bailiffs. And of course the big question is, should they be regulated? Because the bailiff industry, that's the debt collection industry, doesn't want to be regulated compulsorily. They say they can do it themselves, but of course there's no sign that they really are particularly interested. And I'm getting all sorts of inside words that, in fact, you know, the way they go at the moment is effective, and really they'd rather not change. But there's, in the United Kingdom, there's a big call now for bailiff regulation, but it's been put on the back burner by the legislature. Maybe this will get it going. It's going to be a shocking programme, I think, and I can tell you that the bailiff industry already has been warned about it, and they're in a panic.
Right. You did a very good political answer there, but you didn't answer my question.
I'm sorry.
Is there any advice in the programme for consumers to know what to do if the bailiffs do claim that they've got a right to get money? Yeah. Is there some advice?
Yeah, no, it's not an advice programme. It's really it really is an exposure programme. And I think that its use to people will be to show the kind of behaviour that they don't have to tolerate. I think its use to people will be to show that they're not alone if they're being victimised by this kind of behaviour. As it happens, at about exactly the same time, there is a new book on bailiffs, on bailiff law for consumers, of which I'm the editor of it.
Right, so that what we're saying there is in, there is going to be some book available for the consumer to get to know what their rights are.
Yes, there is a new book coming out. It's not directly associated with the programme. I don't think the programme will be referring to it. But, of course, come to the Consumer Action Group. You'll be able to get the book cheaply and you'll get lots of advice. But the documentary should be really salutary warning about how bad it can get. And if you're getting that kind of treatment, it's not only you. You need to realise, and I think this is the great thing, that people who watch this will realise that it's a problem with the bailiff industry and not a problem with you as an individual.
Cool. Yes, because I did have a little bit of research myself to find out that, you know, there's this association for bailiffs,
yes.
but they're not actually regulated by the financial services people, are they?
No, I mean, if you're involved in credit and debt collection, this sort of thing, there have to be licences. But our view is that it's very, very poorly regulated industry. And, of course, once the bailiffs go out on their own, it's very difficult to actually see what they're up to. But despite that, let me say, it is their employers. It's the bailiff firms which are responsible for them. And even more interestingly, for instance, the local authorities that they work for who instruct them, they are actually legally responsible. And it's a bit like extraordinary rendition. I mean, we know that the Americans and the British are being accused of, say, shipping people off to Morocco and Pakistan for torture, and then they wipe their hands and say, well, it's nothing to do with us, Gov. And I have to say that using debt collection techniques in this way is a similar kind of extraordinary rendition for local authorities.
Mark, I've got an idea. Mark, I'm going to cut across here. I've got an idea. When the programme's gone out, I think you should write a one-page fact sheet.
Yes.
To assist people, and we'll splatter it all over the RTI network.
Very pleased to do so. Very
perfect.
Pleased to do so.
Perfect.
Because it's a nasty business. There's not enough scrutiny. And as I say, local authorities, as long as they get their money, they don't seem to be bothered, quite frankly.
Right, well, we'll fix that. Lee?
What?
Are you still there?
I'm just having a kip. Yeah. The battle might say I've just taken Andrew up the Ganges.
Yeah. Now, I mean, if you go to India and you see this long-haired, silver-haired man in a goily or doily or whatever it is, what have you, sitting on top of a rope, then it's a poor fakir called Lee Banks who's up there practising and trying to find his spirit. Sorry?
What did he just call me, Eric?
I don't know. I don't want to say it.
A fakir. Yes.
Fakir is a totally different thing.
No, I think you're just using a Manchester accent. I mean, you normally lie on a bed of nails, don't you? And
I could just imagine that. Yeah, Lee Banks with his long hair on a bed of nails.
Top of a rope, or you're piping up a cobra.
You might not believe this, but I am already known as a cult round here. I have followers on the street. I walk down the street. I am 6'5", not 5'6", like I was described last week. I'm 6'5". I have long auburn hair.
Auburn hair,
or should
you're
that
right.
be ash blonde, I suppose, really.
I think you're
right.
Blue eyes.
Great.
Blue eyes.
Yeah. Comes from the nicotine from the cigarette smoking.
I don't smoke cigarettes. I have never smoked.
Yeah,
that will leave that alone.
Thank
but
you.
Yeah, and I walk down the streets, and I am like the Pied Piper of Delhi.
Right, come on, this is supposed to be a news alternative news program as well. So let's move on to a couple of news items. First one is the Eurozone crisis, which earlier in the week seemed doomed, but now it isn't doomed because Slovakia's parliament has ratified a plan to bolster the Eurozone rescue fund. Unfortunately, what some of you won't know probably is that Slovakia's parliament is a coalition, and whilst the other parties within the parliament have agreed to ratify the plan, it was only done after an agreement on an early election, and that early election is going to take place next March. And it does mean that the current Prime Minister, she's going to be out of a job. Well, she's going to be standing up for re-election, and that's Iveta Radichkova. And the funny thing was the boss of the Freedom and Solidarity Party said, "Today is a black day for Slovakia and European taxpayers. I'm really sorry. But the price that was paid, into political terms, was an early election to try and change everybody's political places in the parliament. But the thing's been ratified, but the Prime Minister looks to have a very short term this time round."
I think it's also sad that Slovakia, being one of the poorest nations, has got itself involved in this. But I also think that the UK is now knocking them off the spot of being the second poorest nation in the Eurozone, don't you?
Well, then the UK's not in the Eurozone.
That's why it's knocked them off the second spot thing. What's it?
Well, Slovakia is the second poorest nation in the Eurozone, and I have to say, right. I mean, you know, they're quite newcomers, and I mean, you know, in a way, good for them because they're able to exercise a bit of clout. I'm sure it must be great for a bit of national pride, and clearly there was a deal going there. But I mean, you know, why not? I mean, everybody's playing politics with the whole thing. Mm. I'm quite sure they couldn't let the Eurozone go to the wall in the end; it would have been catastrophic for them. And you know, I think it's very interesting, and I have to say, at the end of the day, particularly if you're trying to establish yourself, you know. What's wrong with elections? Hopefully it brings balance and energy from politicians. So maybe it's not a bad thing.
Indeed.
I do think it's something that started to prove Slovakia's strength now in the world.
Yes. Well, the interesting thing is, if you want to look at the positive side of it, Slovakia has been mentioned on networks like Sky, the BBC, CNN, everybody in there, even on Al Jazeera as well. So it has enabled the little big country to have a voice for a change, which I think is absolutely marvellous.
Absolutely, go and like Slovakia. There we are.
Yes, indeed. So, it's over. It's over. Analog TV will no longer be broadcast after the 24th of October 2012 as the UK completes its conversion to digital television. And I know what's going to happen. There'll be a Facebook page whinging about it.
Well, there'll be a face sitting in Delhi whinging about it. I think it's absolutely ludicrous. Digital television is the most complete and utter failure that's ever been foisted upon the British public, whether they wanted it or not.
Hello?
Like digital radio, what is the point of it? None of it works. Nothing works. You go on your information channel, all it says is no information, no information. So then you move on. Nothing works in it. It's ludicrous.
He's ranting,
and now the one thing that we actually rely on, and we have done for the last 30, 50, 60 years in Britain, is Anna. Analog. I went out with her.
Yes.
I think it's wonderful.
I do as well.
I think that the quality is just so wonderful. The only thing is that now I have to learn to speak in binary all the time for people to understand me.
Zeros and ones. Exactly. Lee, can I just ask you a question?
No,
on your analog television...
My analog television.
And I'm sorry to anybody outside the UK, but your analog television, you had BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, Channel 4 and Channel 5, that was it.
Well, actually, I personally didn't because none of them would work because I couldn't get it to tune in. But in principle, you're right.
Right, and you've now got a digital telly.
More principles.
I have a digital telly. I have now 800... No, I have more now because they made me retune it. I've now got something like 1,283 channels, of which...
Just a minute.
17 again,
just a minute.
153 are sex channels, 43 are shopping channels,
Lee,
and none of them...
Lee.
What?
Shush.
You can tell I'm in a bad mood, can't you?
Yeah. Lee...
Oh,
you couldn't get on analog BBC One, Two, ITV, Channel 4, and Channel 5.
Please... I could in principle, I just didn't.
Right. Can you now get via a digital broadcast BBC One, Two, ITV, Channel 4, and Channel 5?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Digital's better. And that's the end of that bit, then.
You've got me there, don't you? Well, I'll come back.
Yeah, think about it. But anyway, after lots of whinges and moans, and I promise you there's going to be some more moans, and I think they've made a mistake. This is where Slovakia got it right. When they turned off AM radio or medium wave radio in Slovakia a few years back, they didn't tell anybody for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, they announced they were going to turn it off, and people started to whinge. It'd already been off 2 weeks. They were caught. Beautiful. That's what the government...
That's what you've just done on me, isn't it, you think?
Anyway, moving along. What do we think of this, guys? MPs are back to motion, allowing them to use Twitter during debates in the House of Commons Parliament in the UK.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have any of these stories. This is a setup. I'm being set up by Eric and Mark because they know I'm in India and I can't get them. They haven't sent me any of these stories.
Mark, did I send them to you by email?
Mark.
Yes, I knew about the story. Yeah.
Yes, and did I
copy... Yes, you've got to be in conspiracy.
And did I copy Lee into the exact same email? Could you check
for
me?
Well, I think you tweeted him.
No, check your email, please. I need this verified because I'm not going to be vilified before it's verified because I sent it to both.
That was very clever.
Yes. No, they have just allowed Twitter in,
oh,
in
hang
the
on, I apologise.
And I have to say,
Mark,
no, I apologise. I found it. The problem is, ladies and gentlemen, I have to hold my hands up, that Eric, who's done this list here, didn't put any headlines on it. So all the stories look like one story.
That's
I just found the last one about analogue, and this one about Twitch.
That's because he gave me 45 minutes to produce the list, ladies and gentlemen.
I thought it was still in Slovakia.
Ladies and gentlemen.
5 minutes, I sat here waiting for him to ring me. Then he told me off, which is why I'm in a bad mood, for saying I wasn't here.
Lee, what have you been taking? Is he on something?
I don't know, Mark, but whatever it is, it's brilliant.
Whatever it is, I'm coming over to India immediately.
Exactly. Me too.
But you can't have it. It's legal. It's illegal. Well, it isn't illegal. It's all right, but I've not had any anyway.
Well, anyway, let's get back to the Commons MPs and tweeting. What do you reckon, Mark?
Well, I don't see why not. And I noticed, in fact, quite recently, they just allowed Twitter to be used in the Supreme Court.
Yep.
Which I think is an even more sort of grave, serious, reverent place than the House of Commons. I think, you know, why not? The only thing that amazes me, really, is that it's so much news. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, why not? Absolutely. And to be honest,
I can't see why. How can it be a good thing? The journalists are tweeting from there already. You know, they're tweeting from courts as well, which is a really strange thing. But I'm not sure MPs should do it. How much trouble have MPs got in the last year over the tweets that they're doing?
Well, that's true. That is very true.
When MPs get in trouble for their tweets, it means that they're being indiscreet and we're finding things out that we shouldn't do. That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that. Who is it this morning who's just been found apparently throwing official documents into a waste paper bin?
I know.
We need to know this. The more indiscretions...
Well, we do! Because you just mentioned it.
The less control there is over... The less control there is over information. Sorry, I'm getting excited. The less control there is over information, and the more transparent government we have, it can only be good.
Indeed.
I don't think the transparency of government, it should be based on the fact that you've got some idiot MPs who are that bored, they sit there tweeting about things.
Anyway, no, okay, hold on a minute, Lee. Hold on. Whoa.
That's out to the journalists to make the story.
Why can't? Let's just say, guys, just a minute. It's the middle of a debate, okay? The MPs are all... Are all debating a subject.
What's wrong with that? We have mass debates. In Britain, it's part of the democratic...
Oh. Right, that's fixed it, boys and girls. I've turned them down. Now they're back again.
You turn me off?
Yes, I can. I have that power. So let's just imagine you're in the middle of a debate and it's a very consumer-orientated, non-political subject that's being debated.
Oh, so Mr. Gander's there again, right.
No, why can it not be possible for an MP to put a tweet out saying, we're debating whether Lee Banks should be allowed back in the country. What do you think, yes or no? Why can't that MP actually communicate with his own voters from his own constituency and actually get feedback from real human beings into the Houses of Parliament? What's wrong with that?
Absolutely right.
Because it cheapens the whole of the democratic process.
Oh, it cheapens it. Yeah, right.
Because people are not that clever to be able to respond to something like that in an intelligent, erudite way, which actually creates a kind of debate.
Hey, we're hearing from this is a tabloid journalist.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh!
Exactly. He's a tabloid journalist. In other words, no, you out there, boys and girls, are not clever enough to do it. The journalists are clever enough to do it.
I didn't say the boys and girls were clever enough to do it. Our boys and girls are clever enough to do it. It's the rest of the world.
Oh, right. Yeah, well dug out of that hole. He's got a JCB in India as well. Wayne Rooney has been banned for 3 matches. And I heard on a station... That was unfair because Wayne Rooney is a creative mind in the world of soccer. And
I'll tell you how creative he is. We saw him sitting by the road in the Himalayas eating a banana.
Yeah, right.
it's very good for muscles there. There's a lot of sodium in it. It's very good.
I will give up today. I just give up. I do, honestly. Trying to be a serious broadcast journalist. What do you get? Monkeys.
I'm trying to be serious here.
Are you really? Are you sitting in a toilet or something?
I'm sitting in my son's apartment.
Oh, okay.
It's on the 10th floor of a building.
It's very echoey, isn't it?
It's full of marble because it's posh. It's all posh. It's marble ceilings, marble walls.
India is a big place. It would echo anyway.
It's got four bathrooms. Four bathrooms! Yeah, and I tell you what, over in Delhi, you need them. One for the other.
So you don't. What you're telling me is you're not really interested in whether Wayne Rooney should be banned or not.
Wayne Rooney should just be banned from living.
Ooh. That's not.
No, that's not fair.
I'm not too bothered either. I'm not even sure who Wayne Rooney is.
Who is he, actually?
He plays for Manchester United. He plays for Manchester United, and he's one of the key players of the England football team.
I saw Mickey Dolenz once.
And because of some rather naughty things he did on the pitch, it means that when it gets to the...
Not only naughty things he did on the pitch, if I may add, granny.
What happens now is that at the qualifying stages of Euro 2012, Wayne Rooney, our number one player, won't be able to play.
You're going to laugh, I can tell.
I give up. Let's get on to the next bit.
Well, I mean, he didn't do much good in the rugby last week, didn't he, against France. I don't think he deserves to play.
Oh, my word. Anyway, a stolen or a nicked iPhone, which is the prototype, was the prototype then back then of the iPhone 4, was found because some idiot from Apple left it in, I think it was a restaurant or somewhere, a bar in California. Now, the engineer left it in the bar. Someone picked it up. Now, the interesting thing is that Brian Hogan, 22, and Sage
Wallower.
Yeah.
Wallowing in pity.
28.
If it had an effort, it'd be a wallflower.
Yes.
Were fined $250, which is about £159, but allowed to keep the 4,700 euros that they $4,750 that they made from selling the phone to a technology blog called Gizmodo. But they've
bought Gizmodo for doing that, you know.
Why?
What, for buying it?
And you telling me other journalists don't do the same things?
I'm not defending journalists. I'm just saying that Gizmodo was a bit of a naughty boy.
Maybe not.
That's why they didn't
get stolen property. I mean, but I mean, the amazing thing here is that they were fined $250. They sold it for $5,000. They were allowed to keep the change. I mean, where's the disincentive in that? How amazing is an extraordinary story?
Exactly.
No,
but the journalist, including the editor Jason Chen, whose home was raided, did not have any prosecutions against them at all.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. But it doesn't mean he wasn't a naughty boy doing that behind somebody's back. That was like Mr. Mark. Said stolen goods.
It was
stolen goods. Let me tell you a little story about Paris, parking in Paris. In parking in Paris.
I don't want
Paris,
him to, Mark.
Hang on, Mark.
I want to talk about Delhi.
Shush a minute. Mark, hold on. You can do that in a minute. Right. But when the Telegraph published all the details of the MPs and their expenses, that was stolen goods.
Yes.
Oh, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Just because he's jealous because I'm in Delhi and he isn't, he's having another go at me. Have you noticed? He's had nothing but have a go at me since the moment we started.
Well, I need just to say a little comment here about handling stolen goods. The offence of handling stolen goods is actually dishonestly handling stolen goods. So if you handle stolen goods but you're not doing it dishonestly, then there's no offence. So,
I also add to that that if you do handle stolen goods, the consequences are worse than actually if you stole them.
They are. That's exactly right.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Couldn't agree more. So it does make one wonder what's the, you know, how this judge came to the decision that the Gizmodo blog people, including Jason Chen, didn't, you know, get some kind of fine or sentence for handling stolen goods.
Unless they said they were carrying out just, you know, normal journalistic activities.
Okay. But if you'd been on the News of the World and done it, you'd have been arrested.
Well, that's true. Come on then, Lee, tell us about India. You've been dying to all week.
Go on, yeah.
What do you want me to tell you? Oh, I'll tell you, man. It's absolutely amazing.
By the way, if you want to make a cup of tea, now's a good time.
Oh, are we off the air?
So could you make it Darjeeling?
No, what I meant, Mark, is he's going to waffle on for a bit.
Oh, right.
I'm not. I'm going to tell you something straight and honest. Like, it's they're actually here. It is incredible. You know, they're going absolutely
do. That's India for you. The internet.
That noise is all you hear in India. It might be in the gutter. It might be behind a car, a bush, anywhere. All you hear is like that.
Right.
Oh, I'll tell you what. I actually, when we were up the Ganges, right?
is that another word for the Kazi?
No, we're up the Ganges in the thing.
Have you got a red dot on your forehead now?
Only because I think the Indian government's about to shoot me.
Right. Oh, it's the laser spots, is it?
No, he's got the. He actually thought he was buying a diamond, a bit of glass.
Right. Anyway, I will say this now. Right. Oh, you put me off now. You completely put me off. Honestly.
Well, I'm serious.
There is a building, right? I can see it from here now. And it's a massive office block. And this is the truth. This is not a word of a lie, right? It is a gigantic office block. It must be 30 stories high. And it has been festooned with golden light bulbs because Diwali is the festival of light over here. And it is turned on at night, right? It is massive. There must be 5 million, 10 million light bulbs on this building. People inside must be going through hell. Right. But anyway, they turned it on, and as soon as they turned it on, all the lights in Delhi went out.
I've got a question for you guys, which has always bemused me.
Okay, just ask me a question while I'm in Delhi, and I'm supposed to be doing my bit on Delhi.
Right. So I have a question for you, because what is a story?
What is a story?
It's something you tell people, isn't it?
Yes.
Right. So why is there 30 stories on a building?
Well, it's because they spell it differently. Yeah. A story is an story that you tell people. A story that you climb up is an story.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. Mark, we stopped him.
So anyway, I was there, right? We were up the Ganges, right? And I was sitting there, white water raft like that, and I looked down. And I thought, you know, this would make a wonderful advert for Cadbury's, wouldn't it? And I goes, chocolate. Cadbury's. Yeah, honest.
It's not chocolate.
No. Oh, it's not chocolate.
Cadbury's.
Why? What's Cadbury's?
It's rubbish. Do you realise that only a few years ago, Cadbury's got into a huge argument with the European Union because they were going to rename it as Family Chocolate because it had less than 19%. I mean, if you bought anything with less than 19% of something in it, you wouldn't say that's what it is, would you? I mean,
I've lost the plot.
Well, I bet the Ganges has got more than 90% chocolate in it.
81% of
the Ganges has got 100% chocolate in it. I've been swimming with the dead there.
Don't worry about it, boys and girls. I'll just fade them away because it's time for the end of part one of Postcard from Pop Brad. We'll be back in part two of Postcard from Pop Brad quicker than you can make that milkshake.
From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.